Laying Truth in the Foundation, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Good to be back with you, Barry, again here in the studio. We're lucky enough to be blessed by God with the ability to come together without using the miracle of Skype on a bad weather day, which usually spells disaster for the way our program works. It gives me a lot of extra work to do. So I'm really feel blessed to be able to be face-to-face and be able to discuss these things without giving each other unconscious clues about when the other can speak, because that's usually what happens when you're on Skype. One person has priority, and it's usually when I'm the engineer, it's the person on the other end, which isn't fun, because sometimes we talk over each other, it makes a mess, so none of that today.
Well, you know, it is a good thing, and we've got a lot to talk about today on the program, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to continue our discussion and analysis of the things that surround the tragic events of a week ago Friday, when a, shall we say, very disturbed young man decided that in order to be somebody, he had to cause injury and harm to others. We're talking about the Sandy Hook school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. We are also talking about some of the factors that are mainly not the factors you're hearing in the mainstream media, because that factor, if you paid attention to any mainstream media, whether it be such outlets as the New York Times or some of the other newspapers of records or the TV talk shows like Piers Morgan and others, it's all about the gun. It was, you know, and to the point where we have during this week seen a number of private companies doing things that I believe, Chuck, really show how unconnected people are to what really is laying in the foundation of this particular tragedy. Because this isn't about a gun. It really isn't. It isn't about a Bushmaster 223 or a Sig Sauer or a Glock 19, all the weapons that Adam Lanza chose to bring into Sandy Hook Elementary School.
Well, he didn't even bring the Bushmaster in.
That's true.
It was
locked in
his car. This is why the proposed, quote-unquote, assault weapons ban, and if you want to know what an assault weapon is, I would suggest you go to www.principledpolicy.com, and you can see an article written by a website called Texas Fish and Game, where they describe exactly what an assault weapon is, and you can find out why none of those weapons, including the Bushmaster, are an assault weapon, because an assault weapon is capable of switchable fully automatic fire.
That's right. It can be switched to fully automatic instead of semi-automatic.
And in fact, the gun, the Bushmaster, was made after 1986, which means it can't be bought in assault weapons mode. You can only buy guns built before 1986 in full automatic mode if you have a special federal stamp. And I know that for a fact because, A, I know that particular law, but I also know people who collect, such as you can, because they're very expensive, fully automatic weapons and have the federal stamp and shoot them, which is a very, very, very expensive hobby.
Yes, it can be.
The stamp itself is not expensive, but the ammunition is ruinously expensive.
And we're not talking plinking a can or two along the way.
No, we're talking about you can have all kinds of fun with them shooting up cars and that kind of thing. You know,
not people's personal possessions.
Not
junk
personal
vehicles.
Yes, junk vehicles.
Before anybody gets the wrong impression.
Yeah, the people haul in plate metal and shoot it and all kinds of things. So. We've been to those shoots, but if you want to know what a true assault weapon is, and please avail yourself of that information, because next time somebody tells you that an assault weapon was used in this shooting, the answer is uh-uh.
No, it wasn't.
That's right. It was not.
First of all, none of the weapons that he possessed were assault weapons, and secondly, the one that would have drawn the most attention as a potential assault weapon in being mischaracterized as one he didn't use. He left it in his vehicle. Now, you know, here comes the key, though, Chuck. The problem isn't the gun, because that same tool, that same appliance, as you will, that Adam Lanza utilized to cause harm could, if it had been in the hands of one of his victims, stopped a lot of harm. But that's the side of the story that nobody wants to talk about, but it is the side of the story that needs to be drawn attention to. The fact that we in this society, a certain segment of the society, I should say, Charles.
Yes.
Have deemed to themselves the omniscience to say that they know full well that if you keep guns out of a certain area, nobody will bring guns in that area. Well, we found over numerous occasions in the last few years that these gun-free zones are only applied against the people who are already inside the zone. Those coming in from the outside to cause mayhem and destruction and harm, they might stop for maybe about a second and a half to read the sign and chuckle to themselves as they walk through the door brandishing their weapons, knowing full well that nobody inside can respond back with an equal amount of force. And honestly, Chuck, that's really one of the things we've got to talk about, and that is that anytime someone wants to use deadly force against someone, the first calculation they have to make is, does my victim have the ability of returning force for force? And you see that constantly. Why do women get raped by men? Because the calculation is that women do not have the ability to return force for force unless, of course, they're carrying a concealed weapon.
That's right. Physical strength, the man will win out.
Almost every time.
Yes.
Almost every time.
We're bigger, we're stronger, we carry more muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, yes, in that kind of a one-on-one with average woman, average man will win every time.
Pretty much the case. But and again, it's a whole force-on-force idea. But if that average man went up against that average woman who happened to have a black belt in karate and happened to be carrying her keys in her hand, unless he's got something to balance that force out, he's coming out on the short end of that deal when he makes that attack.
The odds are significantly evened. I believe
right.
In a Star Trek movie, they refer to that as sauce for the goose.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Well, and what we get down to, ladies and gentlemen, is much of the conversation right now at the federal level, from the president, from legislative leaders, both in the Senate and the House, are ban. We've got to do something about these guns. Well, no, that's the wrong attitude, because if you start saying that we're going to have bans on certain types of guns, what you're really doing is you're taking a tool out of the hand of a law-abiding citizen,
right,
who could use it to prevent crimes and assaults and other tragedies. And you're just basically assuming that there's going to be enough uniformed law enforcement officers of whatever stripe constantly available on call and within a very short amount of distance away to balance out the inequality that you're creating by saying we're going to ban these guns. Because, Chuck, I think our listeners are smart enough to realize this. You can ban anything you want to, but if somebody wants it bad enough, they'll find a way to get it.
Well, let's... marijuana is banned. I could probably, in 15 minutes, get my hand on an ounce.
Yeah, well, you live in the city, too. I live out in the country. It might not even take me that long if yeah. I knew where to go to.
Well, the chances are you could hunt around in your neighborhood, and somebody's probably growing someplace.
In my neck of the woods, I wouldn't doubt it.
Although it's a little past harvest, so...
I would assume as much. It's getting a little chilly now.
But the fact is, chances are some neighbor somewhere has it grown in a hydroponic farm someplace.
So, but then again,
yeah,
that's the
whole point.
We ban things and say that only certain people can have them, or you can only have certain types. Well, okay, let's not kid ourselves. We all want to talk about being in a global economy, Chuck. I mean, that's the liberals' big mantra is, you know,
yeah,
we need globalization. I'm all for globalization. I think Glock is actually an Australian company, right? Sig Sauer's German.
German or Austrian.
Austrian. Beretta is Italian. I love globalization in the Second Amendment because it allows me to be able to have a larger set of choices for the tool that I want to use for the purposes of self and home defense and defense of my family, or for my sporting purposes. I love globalization that way, but again, you want globalization, but then you want to ban all the guns. So that doesn't seem to equate even in a remote sense. And now we're going to get into more of the particulars of here of this Newtown issue, because I don't want anybody to think that we're making light of that and just focusing in on the gun, because honestly, there's a lot of other things, Chuck, that we should be taking into consideration.
Well, let's talk about the reasons why this isn't really about stopping school massacres. What is the President of the United States now saying? He wants gun control done by January.
Yes, which means that he's hoping for the lame duck session to get something out so that they can use as a tool.
Not only that, he wants this done before the biochemical fog, confusing fog of emotional override. So people suddenly find themselves thinking rationally
starts
about
wearing
these
off,
issues
that's right.
Again. He wants it done while he's on an emotional high.
Well, of course, Chuck, and that's exactly what's going on here. And we're going to be looking at some of this during this program, ladies and gentlemen. I think we've got an audio clip from a supposed expert that Chuck and I are going to deconstruct for you to let you know how unexpert this viewpoint is. But let's just put it in perspective, Charles. You're right. This isn't about a school massacre. You know, this whole banning guns thing is not about a school massacre because, yes, Adam Lanza did use a firearm to kill 20 students. That's an incontrovertible fact.
Yes.
But the point is that because the media is sensationalizing it and we see the videos and the images of the parents crying and people crying out in anguish and everybody feeling so much empathy, even Barack Obama shed tears. And I understand that he has daughters.
Yeah,
they go to a high-end private school, which probably nobody's going to step into and take a shot at. But then again, you never know.
I was going to say,
and we're not advocating that either.
That's not a lead pipe cinch.
That's not a lead pipe cinch. But the point is that everybody's crying, and it is tragic. These children lost their lives. But you know what, Chuck? Those same children could have lost their lives that day if a gas line had gotten an issue with it or got bent out of shape. I know just around the same time there was a huge gas explosion down in West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
Near my area. Well, it wasn't quite near, it was a little farther, way farther east and south of us, but a natural gas line that just over time eroded and finally weakened enough that kaboom, everything went up and there was a huge fireball that blew down five houses. These kids in Newtown could have been an earthquake. There could have been a fire in the school. We could be talking about these kids, 20 kids dying in Newtown, Connecticut, at Sandy Hook Elementary, for any other reason except Adam Lanza walking in with a couple of loaded handguns. And nobody'd be calling for a ban on schools. Those schools are dangerous places. We got to go get the kids out of them. You won't hear that. You won't hear things that, well, we've got to switch to something else other than these gas lines going into the schools. We've got to hook them all up to solar. Now, maybe you would hear that from the president. But the key is they're missing the point. Even though these 20 children and six adults gave their lives, and, you know, there is great mourning and tragedy for that. Point is, it could have happened in any way, Chuck, because honestly, the worst school massacre in American history happened in your neighborhood.
That's right.
In Michigan.
When I lived in Michigan, I lived in Michigan for 11 years, and I knew about this well because on the anniversary of this thing, people still talked about it. And this happened in 1927.
1927 was the worst school massacre in American history when Andrew Kehoe picked up his... not a gun. He picked up a detonator because he set off 500 pounds of dynamite in the wing of an elementary school building after he'd gotten done killing his entire family in the same manner by blowing his house up. He had another 500 pounds in the other wing of the school building that misfired.
Didn't go off.
But he killed 38 children from ages 7 to 14 at the Bath School in Michigan. And you said Bath. Bath was what, about 20 miles away
Bath
from you?
Bath was about maybe 15 or 20 miles from where I lived in Lansing.
Okay, now granted, 1927 was well before you were born.
There were plenty of people still alive that remembered the Bath school bombing, believe me.
Oh, well, and see, but there's the whole point. That's the worst school massacre we've had in American history, and guns had nothing to do with it, ladies and gentlemen. And mental illness, which we've talked about with Adam Lanza, had very little to do with this. You see, Andrew Kehoe, who was the man who blew up the school, was upset because he had lost a local election for town clerk, and he was mad about high school property taxes.
In fact, the Bath School was brand new, had just opened, and he was angry about he was about to be taxed into non-existence to pay for the school.
Right.
This new school. So he and now get this. This is the most interesting part. He was a member of the school board.
He was a member of the school board. And the reason why I say mental illness may or may not have played a role, he planned this out for a year in advance.
Yes, he did.
He had practiced with the explosives. He had set 500 pounds of explosives in each wing of the school, so he had to have gone in ahead of time and planted all of this explosive. He was not a man who was suffering from mental illness where one day he just got and snapped, grabbed whatever was at hand, which in Adam Lanza's case was his mother's gun collection, and started in on a rampage. But it's the worst school massacre. So if it's about the schools, then we need to ban all detonators and all explosives. Well, we regulate them pretty heavily.
They're more or less banned.
But the point is, it doesn't matter, again, like I said, it doesn't matter if you ban it or not. If somebody has the desire, the drive, or the mania...
Oh, no, you could get it.
...to commit a crime of such a heinous nature, they will do it one way or the other. Same day that Adam Lanza shot up 20 kids and 6 adults in Sandy Hook Elementary, a man in China went into an elementary school with a knife, and I think he knifed, 32?
Oh, was it that high? I knew he killed 18.
He killed 18, but I think he actually assaulted more than 30.
Oh, well, that's okay.
But there you go. It doesn't matter. What if they'd have gone in with a pair of nylon hose and started strangling each person in the bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay.
As people came in,
and he just piled them up in the back bay in a stall like cordwood until somebody finally figured out what was going on. Anything could have happened, but we're all going to, because of the emotionalistic arguments that you talked about and this wave that the president and the administration's writing, we're going to ban all these guns because it's the gun that's the problem. Now, our good friend Larry Pratt, who is the executive director of Gun Owners of America, and I will have to say, Chuck, that probably Larry is one of the most level, unflappable, jovial even, defenders of the Second Amendment. He really doesn't let a whole lot get to him. Now, Chuck and I both know Larry personally. He's a friend of ours. He's come and taught at Camp American, which is another plug for going to campamerican.com.
By the way, I think we're inviting him this year.
We might be having him back in 2013. But Larry Pratt has basically come out and said clearly, our big problem isn't that Adam Lanza had a gun, it was that none of the other, no teachers had guns. He wants the Congress, if they're going to act, to eliminate gun-free school legislation.
Yeah.
Get rid of these gun-free school zones. Now, we'd have to do that on a state-by-state basis, and I know Larry's aware of that, because we really don't want to cede that over to the federal government to decide that they can weigh in, because you know that whole provision in the Second Amendment says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, Congress is, we don't want Congress weighing in and saying, well, in certain areas we can infringe them in certain ways, because they will.
Well, the argument will be, we banned automatic weapons in 1934. Yeah. You did, and it was unconstitutional.
We also banned owning gold around that time, too.
Well,
I see gold's made a comeback now.
Well, that's only because Ronald Reagan legalized the ownership of gold once again.
So in other words, a federal law that's passed doesn't have to be permanent because somebody later on who's thinking rationally should be able to get it overturned.
Yeah, for years you could own numismatic gold, and then Reagan brought it back that you could own. For a while in the 30s, you couldn't even own numismatic coins. You
right.
had to turn those
you
in.
You had to turn everything in. They were all getting melted down. And no, you really didn't get much out of them either.
No, because the par value at that point was changed. You know, a little economic factoid real quick. The par value for gold, a troy ounce of gold is $20. That is the basis of the dollar.
Right.
$20 to an ounce of gold. That we were a gold-based currency, what they called. There are other currencies that are silver-based, and one of them is the pound sterling. If you've heard the right. term pound sterling, it's silver-based.
That's right. It's a silver-based.
Of course, long since we've gone off metals. And what happened was FDR confiscated all the gold and immediately changed the par value to $30 and a fraction. So in other words, he devalued the currency by half. Actually, more
That's
than
right.
half.
More than half.
In the 30s, in order to do... The Keynesian theory is that you can continue to devalue currency, and it really doesn't matter. The Germans proved that doesn't work in the Weimar Republic in 1923 by turning on the printing presses to pay in German currency, pay their war debt, and all they did was basically make a loaf of bread cost about 8 billion German marks. So that didn't work out either. That being said, there's a whole lot more going on here with this idea of banning guns, and Larry's got it right. Let's get the facts out. No gunman walks into a police station and opens fire.
And the ones that do are looking to commit suicide by cop.
That's right. No gunman walks into a local National Guard armory and opens fire. No gunman walks into a local gun club and opens fire. No gunman walks into a gun store and opens fire. My father-in-law owned a gun store for years before his death. And the first thing he would do, he had his door rigged up so that he had to ring you in. And the first thing he would do if he did not recognize the customer was arm himself. I
Smart
was there
man.
When it happened. And I'm strategically enough minded that I got out of the line of fire. Just in case.
Indeed.
Because
indeed.
I didn't recognize these guys either. And I was in the store enough that I recognized some of his regular customers.
Right.
So, the whole idea that gun-free zones create safety
is ridiculous.
It's an absurdity. It's an absurdity on its face. Gun-free zones create a place that someone who's looking for a target-rich environment can find them. And these guys, to a man... The guy in Lakewood, Colorado, the guy at Virginia Tech, the guy at Clackamas, Washington, the guy, this latest kid, Adam Lanza, all of them are looking for a target-rich environment where they will not be confronted by someone with a gun, and when they are finally confronted by someone who is armed, they kill themselves.
Yes. And you know what? And Larry puts it out. He did a Viewpoint article in USA Today back on the 16th of the month. And he basically said, first of all, that blood's on the hands of the members of Congress and then the Connecticut legislature who voted to ban guns from the schools in Connecticut and in most other states.
Exactly.
You know, he's got it right, is that people know when somebody wants to commit great harm, they know to go to a place where there's no effective force to fight back. Usually that means, Chuck, that most gunmen in the base are rank cowards. They
yeah,
have to be because they pick defenseless targets in order to make them feel like they're doing something. You know, like you said, they don't go up against armed officers.
Trained in the use of firearms and required to keep a certain proficiency in order to remain on active duty.
So they don't go. They don't even go against. If a criminal thinks, or if he's in an area where the citizenry is allowed to carry weapons, well, you know, you're going to stop a lot of robberies and a lot of muggings because that criminal doesn't know which one of those potential victims out there may be packing heat and could stop him from committing the crime that he's wanting to commit. So, you know, but that's our big problem, though, is because the legislators immediately grab a hold of the headlines, and they grab a hold of the sensationalism, and we've seen it. Guys like even, supposedly moderate to conservative U.S. Senator Joe Manchin, who comes from West Virginia, which is big gun culture, is crying for assault weapons bans now.
The highest gun ownership in the country per capita is in West Virginia.
Is in West Virginia.
55% of every West Virginian owns a gun.
That's right.
Statistically, obviously not. It's not really that number.
Yeah. So
some
so,
people have five. Some people have ten. Some people have none.
Yeah. Roughly. If you doled them out, half of the population of West Virginia would have a gun.
I would say that Joe Manchin better be careful, because he will be like Mike DeWine, who will come up later.
Actually, let him come up now.
Okay.
I think it's good because I do, like I said to you before when we came on air, I do want to give credit where credit is due. There was a press release that was on Wednesday of this week, from Buckeye Firearms Association, which is Ohio's probably most well-known pro-firearms ownership organization. And they put out a press release on Wednesday announcing that, or applauding, I should say, they're not announcing it, but applauding that Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine had come out and said that he was okay for arming school employees. Now, if that's all the farther you got, now, I would say that that's great, because DeWine is actually going a different direction than people like Mike Bloomberg in New York City and Chuck Schumer and Dianne Feinstein and President Obama. He's trying to separate. But again, if you only read the headline of what Buckeye Firearms puts out, you'd think, oh, yeah, Mike's on our side. He's a great guy. Well, that may be the case for some of you, but Chuck and I tend to read these things a little bit more in depth and between the lines, and what we found out today is that there's a lot of qualifications with this announcement from Attorney General Mike DeWine saying, well, we ought to arm school employees. As a matter of fact, he said, and I quote, if I was on a school board, I would seriously consider having someone in that school who may be an ex-police officer, someone who has significant training, someone who had access to a gun in school. And I keep on the quote, but you would have to be very careful about it. I'm not saying everyone in the school should be armed, but someone who knows what they're doing and who has that gun under lock and key and can get to it instantly out of their office. Okay, Chuck, if you have a gun under lock and key,
there's
no instantly. We're going to break this back here.
Yeah.
Now, Grant, this was said in the context of DeWine announcing that they're going to expand the safety training that the Attorney General's office gives to law enforcement agencies to schools for teachers and other personnel in the schools if they want to take firearms training. Well, if personnel in schools want to take firearms training, they can always take any of the great concealed carry classes that are given all over the state all the time. I mean, I know there's classes going down in my area constantly, and people are lining up to learn how to safely handle and use firearms in an effective manner. Now, basically, they're going to do teachers and administrators starting in January in Columbus. And, you know, Mike DeWine has said that, and he's also said, and I'll give him credit for this one of pointing it out, that the current Ohio law that makes schools a gun-free zone has a little rider in it. It's a little exception clause that basically says if the school board in writing authorizes any school personnel, whether it be an administrator, a teacher, whatever staff, that as long as they authorize them to do so, that person can carry ordnance, firearm, a sidearm, loaded on their person on the school grounds, in the gun-free zone, any time of the day. Now, the big question I have, Chuck, is Mike DeWine going to send a notice to every school board in the state of Ohio reminding them of their ability to do the right thing? If he does that, I'm going to give him lots of kudos. If he'll send out a memo from the AG's office to the heads, to the every school board in the state of Ohio saying, we would recommend that you take advantage of this provision of the law and sign up somebody, give written authorization to somebody in each of your schools to be able to carry a firearm. Now, what I'm not giving him kudos on, and I'm not joining with Buckeye Firearms, I mean, I guess I'll give him a little bit of an attaboy for trying, but all the qualifications that he threw into that comment that he made caused me some great concern, because yes. he's basically, now, that's not saying I want anybody out there who can just go grab a gun and go in without any training, because people can hurt themselves as much as anybody else, because it's a tool. If you don't know how to use a tool, you don't just pick one up and start swinging it or cutting with it if you don't have an idea of its safe use.
For instance, if I wouldn't turn anybody loose with a chainsaw that had never seen one operated before.
Well, somebody turns you loose with a circular saw here, because I got it laying beside me here in the studio as you're doing a little bit of home maintenance.
A little bit of maintenance here, that's right. We're not afraid to use tools. There's a lot of things being said here, Barry, in this article. For instance, I noticed that DeWine has fallen into the trap of the cult of the expert. A police officer is an expert in the use of gun, and therefore, that should be the person, or maybe a soldier. Listen, folks, let me tell you something. I'm not bragging. I can probably outshoot about 75% of the cops out there today.
But you're not going to test that theory.
No, I'm certainly not. I'm also one of those people that, if I was to challenge one, it would be on a range with targets.
Exactly.
This is not the kind of thing I would condone in having a mono-on-mono in-the-street contest like they do in the Western movies. And by the way, most Western movies are so obviously fictional. The number of people who were actually killed in street battles in the Old West is very small. Most places, that went on as a matter of keeping law and order. People carried guns. And the old saying was actually very true. An armed society is a polite society.
It can be, very much so, yes.
Now, this idea, too, that any gun in a school should be locked up. Well, folks, let me tell you something. A guy burst through the door with a Glock 17 and starts shooting. Oh, hold on, Mr. Assault Person.
Let me find my key.
Yeah. In order to be fair, I have to find my key and get my gun out of my drawer so this can be fair and we can shoot it out.
Yeah. So can you delay that shooting right now? So make the line cold until I can go get my gun and then we'll shoot it out.
Yeah. Then
you and I talked about that too, Chuck. That it defeats the entire purpose of having an armed personnel for defense purposes at the building. If the person has to keep the gun and the ammunition locked under lock and key in their office, and then let's say they leave their office on a routine thing, like they go down to the gymnasium. Let's say that your armed personnel happens to be the football coach, okay? Let's say they go down to the gymnasium to see how things are going in the weight room. They're not taking their gun with them they're supposed to keep it under lock and key. But just at that time, in the front doors of the thing, which is between their office and the gymnasium most times, because usually you have your administration on one side of the building, you have all your activities on the other side.
Yeah.
Harry comes in firing. Now, the first thing that's going to happen is, do you think that coach is going to take a dash down the hall while live rounds are being fired to try to get to his office to dig his key out to go unlock a box?
Not going to happen.
No, because it's your basic unconscious defense mechanism is, find a place to hide right now.
Yeah.
Try to get other people out of the way. Find a place to hide right now. Which means that gun is doing them absolutely zero good.
And if he's thinking selflessly, he'll be doing his best to protect the children under his charge.
Exactly. For the people who are in the gymnasium, he's going to be trying to get them to a place of safety and not going down to get his gun. But then again, if he was carrying that sidearm in an open carry fashion in the school, or even in a concealed fashion under a jacket, he doesn't have to make that Hobson's choice.
How do we know that's true? We know for a fact
that's true.
It's true. It's because that's what happened in the Clackamas mall shooting.
That's right.
The mall shooter was confronted with a guy who had a concealed carry under his jacket. He pulled it, drew down on the guy, was spotted by the shooter, who immediately put the gun in his mouth.
That's right.
And
immediately
fired.
Immediately decided not to confront somebody who could return force for force.
So we know that our plan works.
Yes.
And we know that this plan does not work.
I mean, it sounds good on the face of it, like so many press releases from politicians do. But again, I applaud Mike DeWine for not going along with the crowd. But I don't applaud him for setting up so many regulatory barriers that it basically negates any good that could come out of it. Okay, so each school district's going to have to assign somebody, and then they're going to have to send them through the Attorney General's training, which costs money. Then they're going to have to make sure, possibly hire in somebody who's an ex-police officer, ex-military, etc., which means they have to hire new personnel. Then they have to make sure what happens when the person's sick or has a day off?
Yeah.
Who fills in the gap at that point? Do you have to train multiple people? And then do you have to have a lottery at the school to determine which day who brings their gun? Chuck, it makes no sense whatsoever. Or do they all have a key to the lockbox and there's one gun among three or four people who've been trained? So that's a recipe for problems too, because if you've got multiple people trained, then you can cover multiple points of approach should an Adam Lanza or a Kehoe decide to come into the school to create chaos.
Barry, anybody who understands any kind of strategic operation understands that one person in a building armed is probably not enough.
No. Well, the point is that many of us understand the idea of redundant systems.
And you know what? The knowledge that two or three or four people or more might be armed in that building is enough of a deterrent that that person will not make that decision in the first place. As we said, these gunmen do not open fire in a police station, in a National Guard armory, in a gun store, in a gun club, for the simple reason that the odds are way too high that you're going to get it. You might get off a couple shots, but you're going to get it real quick.
You're not going to be too successful in your claim to fame, as some
of
these guys are trying to do. So again, like I said, I believe that Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine has a good start of an idea. He's at least not following the crowd and moaning and groaning about it's all the fault of the guns. But he's not quite going the full length of time and saying, you know what, we really just need to repeal Ohio Revised Code 2923.122, which is the gun-free schools legislation. That's the law that basically bans firearms from being on school property. Okay, again, if somebody's shooting up the school, they're not going to care what the law says. They're bringing one in anyway.
That's the whole point. Passing laws does not make things not happen. And we have to get over this idea that somehow we're going to be protected because somebody in Washington, D.C. gets a feel-good ban. Somehow banning your rifle and my rifle and your pistol and my pistol makes their life a dangerous thing to live. Sorry. My pistol and my rifle make your life easier to live, because unless you're in New York City, where Mike Bloomberg is mayor, and in fact, one of the most violent cities in the world, not to mention in America, and in fact, the most violent city in America, gun death-wise, is Chicago.
Yes, it is.
Chicago has the most restrictive gun law.
422 school children have been shot in Chicago this year.
That's right. And the fact that they weren't shot in their schools means nothing.
Means nothing, that's right.
Those children were shot just the same as if they'd been all grouped up in a school and somebody opened up on them with a Browning water-cooled automatic belt-fed machine gun.
That's right.
The fact is, they're just as dead. Chicago knows this is a problem, and yet here we are. The federal government is trying to have us do it, as Barack Obama says, the Chicago way. That does not work.
I'm sorry, but I don't want my part of the country looking like Chicago.
No, thank you. Well, we'll pass on that. And, you know, we've got other factors involved here. In fact, I have an article here in front of me that I haven't seen because I just opened it. So you haven't seen it. Sorry.
Okay.
It's from the Mail Online.
Okay.
The most violent country in Europe. Britain is also worse than South Africa and the U.S.
Yes, and funny, and isn't it the British gun control laws that certain celebrities and talkers are saying we need to be more civilized like Britain?
This is posted because of that diatribe, and we have it here if we get time to play it, but it's Piers Morgan with Larry Pratt, in which Larry Pratt basically says, if you want less violence, then have more armed people.
Exactly.
Gun-free zones don't work.
That's right.
And Piers Morgan refers to him as stupid and a horrid example of what's wrong with our country.
And this is coming from a Brit who's over here as a guest. So Piers Morgan ought to think and take a look at his own country, because gun control isn't working in Britain. As a matter of fact, some of the most heinous crimes that have been happening in Britain, many of them have had gun violence because they're still getting guns, but others, people getting beaten with steel rods and you name it.
Guess what? People being robbed at gunpoint.
Yeah, gunpoint.
In fact, the number of gun crimes in Britain since they've gone through what amounts to a complete handgun ban is up by huge double digits, like in the 60% range. Why? Well, the reason is obvious. No one else is going to be armed. So these guys don't feel bad. Look, they don't feel bad about robbing you. They don't feel bad about raping you. They certainly aren't going to feel bad about carrying a pistol.
That's right.
And they probably won't feel bad about killing you.
That's it.
And the fact is that what the Britons argue is that, well, you have less chance of being killed by one of these guys because you aren't carrying. It's like, okay. And yet, I can be pistol whipped. I can be beaten, which is, all those are way up. Home invasions are gigantically way up. In Australia, which has done it more recently, their numbers are abysmal. It's terrible. Their violent crime rate is way up for the simple reason that no one has the ability to defend themselves anymore. And this was done in Australia as a knee-jerk reaction to a school shooting, I think. And the same thing in Britain.
Yes. Well, but again, and that's what we're looking at over here, but you know, speaking of articles, and I hope you've got a chance to look at this one, because there was one that came out on Tuesday on Fox News, and I think it got to something we discussed earlier this week a little bit more in depth than even we discussed it, and that is the role of violent video games in creating school massacres. If you remember Pearl, Mississippi, Paducah, Kentucky.
That's right.
One out in Washington State, and of course, Adam Lanza in Newtown. Every one of those was connected that the shooter, the young shooter, the teenager to 20-something shooter, also was heavily involved in violent video gaming. And Fox News in a technology section says that the Connecticut school killings reignite debate about violence in video games. And they talked about ones that we've talked about, Call of Duty, Grand Theft Auto, and saying that, yeah, they're having impacts. But they interviewed Brad Bushman, who's a professor of communication and psychology here at Ohio State, and basically said that, you know what, he says, we can say whether violent video, he goes, we can't, so it's impossible to say what caused any given person to commit a horrific act. I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
But he says, but we can say whether violent video games increase aggression, and they do. The scientific data, when this was published, his study was published 2 weeks ago in the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology, showed that people who played a violent video game for 3 consecutive days showed increases in aggressive behavior and hostile expectations each day they played. So it's a cumulative effect. The more you play, the worse it gets. Says that the evidence is like it's overwhelming to the researchers. That this situation says, but Bushman says that basically what they did, that they put a link here, they had people in his study had gamers using either gun-shaped controllers or standard controllers to play the video games, and they aimed at human-shaped targets or bullseyes. What do you expect? The ones who were using the controllers that were shaped like a gun and were shooting at human targets were much more violent and more likely to aim for the head than people shooting at targets. It says video games, his paper noted, video games are excellent training tools.
Oh, look.
And this is something that the Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman and all of his research, and you can get his books On Killing or Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, both of which we'll put up on our Amazon site at principalpolicy.com. He's done this research. He's an expert in the field. He trains military on the psychological effects of taking lives.
The military will tell you right up front, kids who have trained on some of these games are, quote-unquote, much better soldiers. They're easier to train. They don't have any compunctions against learning how to kill human beings.
You really don't have to start break them down to build them back up into the way you want them to be because they're already there.
No, and they're good shots. They tend to be good shots because they've learned how to the basics of aiming a gun. So, yeah, that's exactly true. You know, it's interesting that this comes up because we've been talking about some of these things, and people on quote-unquote experts are admitting these things, and yet they'll still come out and say, well, yes, but I'm still against guns. We have an interview that was done on a local radio show, and I was so intrigued by this thing. What you'll hear this person say is, I think we're going to stop it in a number of places. First of all, this person's quote-unquote expertise leaves something to be desired, I think.
Yes.
Yes, he may have studied it, and he may have a PhD, but what he's actually learned is not particularly impressive. In fact, it's laden with Marxist historical theory and having to do with race and those kinds of things. So basically, whether or not we care about a killing is supposedly based on the race of the people who are killed. It's utter nonsense, and we'll stop the tape and talk about that. But we're going to go ahead and analyze this.
Very much top of mind for a lot of people because of the number of young children that were involved. And sadly, this isn't the first time this has happened. We hope it's the last. But let's bring in James Allen Fox now. James Allen Fox is a criminology professor at Northeastern University and has studied a little bit on the history of some of these shootings in the United States. Good morning, James. How are you?
Good, thank you. More than a little bit. I've spent 30 years dealing with this topic.
So you know the topic better than virtually anyone. And let's talk.
Okay, not so much.
Well, that's the myth of the expert coming through right now. You notice that Fox was immediately quick to talk about how long he'd been studying this issue as if that was his qualification that, I've studied it for so long, you can't question my credentials.
When you study it with a set of paradigms that may not allow you to see certain issues, what good is that study? You know, no one has a completely open mind, Barry. We all approach things with a certain set of presuppositions, and
Absolutely.
We're about to find out what Professor Fox's presuppositions are.
James, about what makes this situation, this shooting in Newtown, so unique and one that has touched us in the way that it has?
Well, its unique effect on our psyche and on America has to do with several factors. Of course, the number of victims is on the relatively high side. We've had shootings that involve more, but this is one of the larger. Obviously, the age of the victims, being young children.
Let me ask you a question, Barry. I agree with him on this that somehow age matters.
Uh-huh.
Would this have been different if it had been in a high school? I think the reaction would have been somewhat different, but the fact is it really different? The fact that these kids were 6 years old rather than maybe 16, 17, 18 years
old.
Well,
no, because I think the impacts upon the families in the community are going to be the same, whether it was Columbine, which was a high school, or if it's Sandy Hook, which was an elementary school. The fact is that somebody decided to take the lives of other human beings who had, as far as we know at this point, not had any direct negative impact upon that person.
There is a certain presupposition that seems to pervade even people of faith who are listening to this thing, and that is this the murder of the innocents. If you see where I'm going.
Well, I know exactly where you're going to.
Okay, you and I are Calvinists, so we're coming at it from an entirely different angle.
Yes, we are.
Total depravity. Everyone is as dead in sin as they can be until they're regenerated by Jesus Christ. So this idea that, yeah, are they innocent of anything serious? Yeah, their sins are minor. We would consider
them
minor.
We all have sins, and some are sins of ignorance, and some are sins of omissions and commissions. And
nonetheless, they're sinners.
They're sinners as well. But you know, we pray that many, if not all of them, were in a relationship with Jesus Christ
Hopefully.
And who knew Him, and who are resting in the bosom of their father now. Well,
the floodgates of heaven opened. And,
yes.
And
I'm sure we'll get calls and emails about this. But you know what? I would love to talk in another program how that particular presupposition among some of our evangelical friends can end up creating logical traps for them when it comes to another issue, that of abortion.
Yes.
And again, we've had other episodes like that, too. We had a shooting spree in California in the late 1980s in which five elementary school children were killed and 29 were wounded. That involves Southeast Asian children in an impoverished neighborhood, not white upper middle class kids in a suburb in Connecticut. And the way our society is, that just has a greater impact on.
I disagree because I remember that shooting. Remember it very well.
Yes, I do too.
Again, this is that Marxist historical theory, the idea of the class struggle, and somehow white people don't care about little Southeast Asian kids being killed. Let's not kid ourselves. Yes, sir. Yes, we certainly do care.
Okay, let me just be frank about it. I know for me personally, and I'm sure I'm speaking for a swath of our audience out there, I had no idea what socioeconomic demographic Sandy Hook Elementary students are in. I have no idea of any of the children of what their ethnic backgrounds are. The point is, they were children in a victim roundup zone who somebody took advantage of their defenselessness and used it for his own purposes.
I did not see a picture of the kids who were killed.
I didn't either.
For
and
2 days well, after
the
massacre.
Well, I still haven't seen pictures.
There's a photo montage out there of all the teachers and all the children killed. And I've seen that. And it's very tragic. But the fact is, I had no idea what racial makeup this school was before this thing came out. So I think this is a completely bogus analysis of the situation.
Well, but you know, the other thing that he's inadvertently backing into with that comment, he's talking about our cultural situation.
Yes.
Our cultural situation is now that the media is choosing winners and losers and picking which ones they want to sensationalize for certain political purposes, and a shooting of Vietnam children didn't meet the media's standard of needing to drive a political message as badly as this one did, driving gun control for the Obama administration.
The real problem was the death toll wasn't high enough.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, that's a macabre way of putting it.
The old chestnut from the journalism schools, if it bleeds, it leaves.
It leaves, yeah.
And that's all, and certainly on the mass media that has treated this case in its extreme. And finally, of course, is the location. Being so close to New York City, it has allowed a stream of journalists to go back and forth between New York and Newtown to cover this case. If it were happening in Utah, I don't suppose you'd have the same level of coverage.
Okay, he's right.
Yeah, he's got that one dead.
I'll
give him that one full well, although there was quite a bit of media coverage over the Paducah, Kentucky shooting back a number of years ago.
But Paducah isn't that far from St. Louis.
That's true.
But he's correct. Limousine liberals can hop in their little cars and be in Newtown, Connecticut in about an hour, do quote-unquote coverage, and be home in their snug little beds at night in their suburban. In fact, many of them actually live in Connecticut, guaranteed. So he's correct.
James, when did we all remember Columbine, but that certainly wasn't the first. You referenced the shooting in California. When did these things start to happen? I've heard on the radio there was an incident in Michigan way back in the 20s. When did these things start to occur?
Well, that was the bombing of a school, which 45 were killed in 1927. We've had these things for decades. There was in 1949, Howard Unruh walked through the streets of Camden, New Jersey, and killed 13 people. Of course, 1966, we had the Charles Whitman shooting 14 from the top of the tower at the University of Texas. I could go on. The difference, however, is, well, one is our memories are a little short, but two is the nature of the media coverage. in that back in those days, even back in the 80s, you wouldn't see a line of satellite trucks parked outside a crime site covering the case instantaneously into our living rooms through satellite hookups. We didn't have that technology. But now we do, and it's almost, when we watch the television, we see children running out of school, cameras in their faces with their tears still fresh. It has a greater impact on us. We're seeing it as it's unfolding.
Yes. Again, agree with that. How much of the hysteria is media-driven, then, is the question. And he doesn't answer this question. He just basically tells it as a matter of fact, possibly laying bare the fact that it's a little too, maybe a little too easy to get there and get it in your face.
James, you've studied these for more than 30 years, and certainly you've heard that the calls for gun control. Is gun control an answer here? Is it part of a solution? Where do you stand on that?
Well, the solutions to mass murder are extremely difficult for a number of reasons. I am a proponent of gun control. I think it can deal with the kind of violent crime we see every day in America, but you shouldn't really count on it to prevent the most extreme form that we've seen, these mass murders.
Okay, hold on. It can't deal with the most extreme forms, but it can certainly deal with the everyday crime that we see in the streets. Really? How?
Yeah, there's no relationship in that comment that he made to anything that remotely looks like reality.
It's nothing even approaching rationality. That was simply, this guy's a gun control proponent,
yes,
and he's basically not afraid to tell you that, and yet he can't tell you the reasons why gun control would work.
Extremely deliberate, determined. They will get the weapon they need, no matter what impediments we put in their place. Background checks don't tend to work with these cases because these men generally do not have criminal records. They do not have histories of psychiatric treatment, and they will not be disqualified. And even if they were, they can certainly steal a gun from a relative or a family member. We've seen that happen. So assault weapon ban, limit on the size of magazines, closing the gun show loophole. These are all good ideas that we should be doing.
There's something that he said in that we got to think about, because he talked about the people getting access to the gun. He said that they don't have a history of military, they won't be disqualified. So what he's saying is gun registration or concealed carry licensing, well, it doesn't work because we know it's all the fault that there's guns out there. What he's trying to set up is this whole scenario that, oh, they'll get around all that, and we're normal law-abiding citizens. Once they get a gun, will then be dangerous and could go off any second.
Oh, that's it. And right here he says, well, magazine limits,
ban on
gun shows, blah, blah, is a good idea. Why?
He hasn't made the case for
that. No, he hasn't even. In fact, he's made the case against it. What he's basically proven in this little diatribe is the idea that licensure and registration do not work.
That's right. But the point is, you know, he said these people, you know, blah, 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 they don't have any history. Blah. That's not true. Most of these, especially the young people who have taken and killed their fellows in the schools, all had histories of some mental issues or on psychotropic drugs prescribed at the schools.
At the school.
So, Professor Fox, come out of the academia, come out of your little white tower, and come down and start looking at what's actually happening.
Let's see.
They're good things, but maybe not for the right reason. It's extremely difficult to prevent a mass murder. The only consolation, I know it's no consolation to the families in Connecticut, the only consolation is that these are extremely rare.
Bottom line, they are exceedingly rare, folks. We have 320 million people in this country. A tiny percentage of them are shot by mass murderers over a long period.
Yes.
And the fact is, he just told you at the end, all these measures will go nowhere in preventing mass murder.
Mass murder.
They're a great idea, but we don't know why. It's basically what
he
said.
That's exactly what he was getting at is, Just trust me on this. I have 30 years of research experience, so I'm the expert, and just follow what I tell you.
And Barry, this is the caliber of thinking that we're seeing today in the banned gun movement.
Yes, yes, that's exactly right.
This is exactly it.
You can expect Fox to be pulled in front of a congressional subcommittee
so that
he can say all this, and I hope that he gets in front of people who think clearly on the gun issue, who can take that argument apart like we just did.
And ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of our program for today. Join us again on Monday for another Principles and Policies.